All right, so we are holding on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, the last, second line from the end of the narrow line, the line begins with Maisha. Okay, and we started talking about Bishul Akum. We talked about what the source for it. Originally, the Gemara thought it might be based on a din, it might be based on a pasuk. Then we said in the end, that's just an asmachta, it's a din d'rabban. Either Rashi says because you don't want that a Yisrael is going to get in the habit of eating together with a goy, and the goy may end up eating, may end up giving him tray for food to eat. Tosfos says that it's because of chasness, same as many of the other things in our Mishnah. So we started talking about
rather than
the concern about Dover Tomei.
And why is that?
Because they say it seems more logical to say that it's because of chasness.
By what measure?
That's just what Tosa says. Because if you're going to worry about the Dvorim Tmeim, then some of the rules that we're saying over here, Tosfos doesn't elaborate, but Pashtus, why would it only apply to something that is Nechal or Shulchan Malachim? Why would it not apply to something that can be eaten raw?
It's
a concern of Chassas, basically. Tosfos says that could be both, and therefore, but again, we discussed yesterday that if the goy cooks them in a Jew's house, you can argue with Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Abraham Rab David, which is not the famous David, even though he has the same name. But if the goy is cooking in the Jew's house, then there shouldn't be an issue of chasnas or dvarim tmeim. But Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with that. So you have it ends up being a machlokas rishonim in both opinions.
Chasnas when they're good friends.
If he's cooking in the Jew's house as a servant or whatever, not necessarily. No. Okay. All right. Anyway. So we started discussing, we said that the two criteria are, it has to be something that can't be eaten raw, it has to be something that's olal shulchan malachim, that would be served at a king's table or somebody important's table, and some of the Rishonim also learn on the basis of the previous part of the Gemara, that it also has to be something that nishtanim ribu yaseh, that it's something changed from its original form through fire.
To
qualify for Bishul Akum. Okay. So, Gufa, getting back to something we said before, Omar, and then it says over here, Rav Baba Chana, but it's really before the previous piece of Gemara, said Rav Chonan Bar Ami, Omar Apadost, anyway, Omar Rav Yechanan, Hai Ovid Gechavim Dechorich Reisha, if a goy singed the head of an animal, so again, you have the head of an animal, the goy will take it and sit over it, somebody will take it and singe it over a fire to burn off the hair before you start salting and doing whatever you need to make it edible. So if a goy does that with the head of an animal, you're allowed to eat from that head, even though it got a little bit roasted in the process, even from the tips of the ears, which are the first part to get roasted. We don't say it's considered bishul akum because he didn't mean to cook. His purpose was to burn off the hair. So even though it got cooked, it was an incidental thing. Okay, Amar Ravina, Hilchah, so Ravina says based on that, and therefore we can say another din as follows. Hai Oved Gechavim B'Shodah Sichta La'atuna, if a goy puts a wooden peg into an oven, now a wooden peg, when you first cut it from the log of wood, it's fresh, it's hard to, you can't use it well, it's too soft. So you have to harden it by baking it for a short time in an oven. So suppose a goy does that. Now, previously, a Jew had, in this oven, he had buried a pumpkin, like inside the ashes or whatever. So the goy didn't realize that it was there. And then the goy lit the fire in order to bake his peg over there. A shafir dummy, then it's okay. A yid later on is allowed to eat the pumpkin. It's not considered bishul akum. So the question is, Pshita, well, isn't that obvious? It's exactly the same case as Rabbi Yechanan's situation with the hair burnt off of the head.
Right.
The answer is Ma'ud Tamil of Ashulim Mona Kamachabin, because you might think like this. When it comes to a peg in an oven, you have two steps that take place with this peg. One is there's kind of a cooking that's being done in the sense that you have first the heat of the fire cooks all of the moisture, the water that's in the peg. It cooks it and then evaporates. And then the second stage is that it causes the peg to harden. That causes the wood itself to harden. So you would think maybe the goy does have in mind, unlike in the previous case with the hair, where there's no the goy doesn't have any kind of cooking or roasting in mind at all. All he wants to do is burn the hair. Here, on the face of it, he does have a certain kind of cooking in mind, namely to cook out the water that's in the peg, which is the first stage of turning it into a usable peg. And therefore, so that should be that should then that should be considered bishul. And therefore, no, the chiddush is that the we're saying that the goy intends primarily the second stage, which is the hardening of the peg.
But the peg is not a meichel. I don't think
that's the Rashi actually says the vort is that the Rashi says the vort is that the, that you don't consider in bishul the kalin is the expression Rashi uses. There's no such thing as cooking when it comes to kalin. Now, Tosfos argues on that because Tosfos says, what are you talking about? This that we're saying that there were these two stages in it, in Hilchot Shabbos, in Masechta Shabbos, this comes up. And in fact, for that reason, if a person does this kind of thing on Shabbos, he will be chayav from a vashel.
So that's just a Shabbos.
But the point is, because there is such a concept as bishul with kalin. However, Tosfos says, the point is,
Bishul, or is it
Melachos? In other words, Bishul is one of the 39 Melachos, right? So therefore, the point is, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, the fact is, it is a kind of Bishul. It's not a real full-fledged Bishul, but nevertheless, it can be considered some kind of Bishul, and he does have Kavanah from it. So therefore, as far as Shabbos, we're going to be Machmer. When it comes to Bishul Akum, we mean that he has to be doing something that's considered a normal kind of cooking. So therefore, Peg doesn't count for that. There is some discussion among the Rishonim of various other possible nuances in this. What if the guy did know the pumpkin was buried over there? What if after the guy lit the fire, you went and put the pumpkin in there? A few different nuances of that. A few different variations like that. Okay. Anyway. All right. Another case. Omer of Yehuda Omer
Shimon. You put the pumpkin after the guy. What's the result? After
we lit the fire, well, then you might have a problem. Or maybe not actually, because then fakir, the Jew is the one who put the food in, so therefore it's not really visual act.
The fire was turned on before.
Yeah, right. Okay. Anyway, Amar Rabbi. So you have different. I don't remember exactly. And here's another din. Suppose a Jew put a piece of meat on the coals. And a goy came along and turned it over on the coals, mutter, then that meat is mutter. Most of the mafarshim say that it means that he turned over the meat. Some of them want to say, as a bit Yosef, I think, talks about, that it may mean just that he didn't touch the meat, but rather he turned over the coals. So the coals themselves were already there, the goy didn't touch the meat. Basically, the underlying machlokes has to do with the question like this. If he takes it off the fire and puts it back on, can you say when he puts it back on, it's considered like a new act of cooking? Then it really would be bishul akum. As opposed to if you say that the turning over is considered part of the process and it's not considered that he really did anything different than before, then you could say that he turned over the actual piece of meat. Anyway, so we're saying this
much. Didn't touch the meichel.
So that's according to this. The problem is so much that isn't so much that he touches the meichel necessarily. The problem is if he takes it off and then puts it back on, maybe you could consider that now he's doing a new act of visual. So that's the reason why to argue. But therefore he touches the coals, and therefore he's not touching the food, so therefore it's not really an act of visual.
What do you mean he doesn't touch the food? If he turns it around, he touches the food.
That's why you have an explanation, that the hafach boy means not that he turned over the meat, but rather he turned over the coals.
Okay,
so it's mutter. So the question is, hechidomi, what's the scenario over here that we're saying it's not considered visual?
Fine, but if he turns the food, then it's visual.
According to some Rishonim, yes, I just said, you have a machloikas, what it means here in the Gemara. When it says, v'hofach boy, does it mean he turned over the meat, or does it mean he turned over the coals?
Yeah, we understand it to be the coals, but...
No, not necessarily. Some Mephoshim understand it one way, some Mephoshim understand it the other way. The underlying machloikas is the question. If you pick up something off the fire and put it back on, is that considered a new act of visual or not? If you say that yes, then it would have to be in the coals. If not, then it could mean the meat. Okay, so the question is, hey, Chidomi, what's the scenario? Ilema de Eloi Hofech Bey have a boshel. If the case is where the meat would have ended up cooking, where the meat was going to cook without the goy's involvement, pshita, well, then obviously it's not Vishalakum. The goy did the goy's involvement, didn't add anything. Elalav, Lechura, it has to be, de Eloi Hofech Loi have a boshel. If you're talking about the case that if he hadn't turned it over, it wouldn't have cooked at all, then of course, my mutter, why should it be mutter? Vishaloi Vikachavninu, then it really is Vishalakum. So why would it be mutter? The answer is loyt zricha, yes, but the chiddush is, the case that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is talking about, the Eloi hofach hababoshel b'tauti shoy, suppose that without the goy turning over the meat or its coals, as the case may be, it would have taken 2 hours to cook. B'hashtab kaboshel b'chod b'shaita, now it takes only 1 hour because he turned it over and therefore he made the fire burn better, or he made the meat better positioned or on the coals or whatever. Therefore, so you would think, you would think, therefore, him making it cook faster is considered something significant. Therefore, it should be bishulakum. The chiddush is that it's not, since it would have eventually cooked without his involvement. then therefore it's considered. Therefore, it's not considered bishlak.
The fact that it cooks.
The fact that it cooks quicker doesn't help. Doesn't change anything. Okay. So the question is, v'ha'omer of Asi, omer of Yechanan. What about though? Didn't Rav Asi say in the name of Rav Yechanan, kol shul k'maychol ben Rusoi, ein ben mishum b'shula over Yechavim? Anything that has reached the stage of Maychol ben Rusoi. Ben Rusoi was a famous robber. So he was always on the run. He could never take the time to cook his food all the way through. So he would cook it. Different Rishonim have different understandings whether he would let it cook one third or one half. Whatever the point is, as the Rambam holds a half, other Rishonim hold a third. Anyway, the point is that once it reaches that stage, it can be considered as edible already because we see that Ben Rusoi would eat it. And we're saying once food has reached Maichel Ben Rusoi, then it's not. Then we're not worried about Bishul Akum. Implying, so if it's not yet the Maichel ben Rusoi stage, then there is an issue of Bishul Akum.
So
you said a third of a half, third of a half. A third of a half, whatever.
A third
or a half of the normal amount of time, of the normal cooking that it takes. The point being, again, we're saying before that, like this, the meat would have eventually cooked, but it would have taken longer. And you're saying, oh, the goy made it cook faster, made it cook faster on the poles, therefore it's mutter. But why should it be mutter? If it wasn't yet Maichel ben Rusoi, then there shouldn't be an issue of Bishul Akum. Even if eventually it would have reached Maichel ben Rusoi, but still, he made it get there, yes. The answer is no. Hossam, that case that Rabbi Yochanan is talking about, is going to Oseh the Silta, is we're talking about, let's say, the Yid just put a piece of meat in a basket near the fire, but not near enough where it was actually going to get cooked. And maybe it would have gotten a little warmed up, but not really cooked at all. The Shakla of the Kavim Oseh the Tanura, and then the guy picked it up and put it in the oven. That is definitely considered visual. But the case where we were talking about before, where it's already directly on the coals, even without the goy getting involved, it will eventually end up cooking. Therefore, that's not an issue. Therefore, we're not worried over there about Maichel ben Rusoi. Different explanation that some of the Rishonim have. The silta can also, the silta, it actually says, means a sal, a basket. But the other Rishonim learn that it can mean like a spit. Like you put meat on a spit, on a long piece of wood. So like originally the Yid put it on a spit, but it's not close enough to the fire to actually cook properly, and the guy moved it over on above the fire, so it'll actually cook. Same result. It comes out to the same thing in halacha.
That's good as a spit. No,
yeah, silta would be an Aramaic. Silta is an Aramaic word meaning a piece of wood.
Okay.
In fact, we learn like that in a Braisa. Maniach Yisrael Boser Agav Gecholim. A Jew is allowed to put a piece of meat on coals, or Vo'ov Gecholim Mahatachloy, and then a Goy can be coming and turning it over. Again, it meaning either the piece of meat or the coals, according to the different Rishonim. Ad Sheyov Yisrael Beit HaKnesses Leim Beit HaMedrash, until the Jew comes back from the Shul or from the Beit HaMedrash, Ve'enei Choshesh, and you don't have an issue, provided, of course, that there's no possibility that the Goy swapped out the food for some other. So it would either have to be that there's somebody Yotzev Nichnas, or it would have to be that there's no other today for food available. Available, that like in the locked room or whatever, or some of the posts can say it's good enough also if you don't tell him just when you're going to return, because then he's mirsas, he's afraid any second you might come in and see him and then see him doing something like that. Similarly, a woman is allowed to put a pot of food on the fire, and a goyter can come, and stir the food, which also helps it cook faster. So again, we see it similar to turning the meat on the coals. Until the Jewish woman comes back from the bathhouse or from the shul, on the side here, there's a girsah from the market, and again, there's no problem, because it's, so therefore, that fits with what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying, that there's no problem as long as it would have eventually cooked without the goyis or the goyters involved.
What happens if the shiksa has some trap of food next to her that she...
Then you have an issue, because then she might have swapped it out with your food.
Not even swapped it out, but some of the trap could have come inside the oven or whatever.
Okay, so then that's a difference. That's a different issue. Then you have to talk about, then you have the whole fine. So as long as you have any kind of problem like that, then yeah, those are things to consider, yeah. Okay. There are some of the Rishonim who learn that this whole kind of thing is really only b'diavad, like this where you had to go to shul or the Beit Medrash or what have you, but it shouldn't necessarily be done l'chatchila. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is that as long as there's no issue that the goy can swap it out with their own food or mix it up with their own food or whatever, then there's not an issue as long as it would have cooked by itself without the yid's involvement. So now we have a question like this. What about the other way around? What if it was the other way around? What if the goy put the meat on the fire and a Jew came and turned it over? Would that be enough to make it no longer considered bishul akum? Amar Nachum Eitz Kavah Chaimer. So Nachum Eitz says, sure, we can make Kavah Chaimer. Gomre Biyad Erev Kachavim Mutter. Madach was saying that if it was finished off by the guy, where he turned it over and made it cook faster, it's Mutter. Gomre Biyad Yisrael, like Holshekin. How much more so if it was completed by a Jew, that it should be Mutter.
Even if it's already almost
so
cooked.
No, so, okay, we just mentioned Michael Bender Rassoy. So you have, now, all we said, so we said before that once it's Michael Bender Rassoy, then it's not Bishalachum. So one way of looking at it that the post can talk about, if the goy already brought it to Michael Bender Rassoy stage, then that's it. It's too late for the yid to be involved.
It's not a blanket statement.
So it's not necessarily a blanket statement. We could be talking about that the goy hadn't yet brought it to Michael Bender Rassoy stage. It's still before one third or one half.
That's different.
That's what we're saying. Yeah. Okay. So now we have another discussion. Itmar Nami, and in fact, we have another discussion on this topic. Amar Rav Babachana Amar Yechanan, but Amri Loru, others say Amar Rav Acha Babachana Amar Yechanan. The other version is not Rav, but Rav Acha Babachana, says in the name of Rav Yechanan. Ben Shein Yech Oved Gechavim Bahav Chisro, whether the goy put the meat on the fire and the Jew turned it over and made it cook faster. Ben Shein Yech Yisro Bahav Chavim Gechavim, Mutter, then it's Mutter. The Ene Oster Ad Shtetch Chilos of the Gomer Biadev Gechavim, it's only Oster at the beginning and end, were all done by the goy. So again, as far as the Michael Ben Rassoy business, you have...
It could have been started. By the goy, right?
Right.
And
well, one second.
And listen, Gil. Yeah.
So one second. As far as the Michael Ben Rassoy business, again, you have some Mephoshim that understand, therefore, if the goy already brought it to Michael Ben Rassoy, then it's no good, because
right.
Then we said that's considered visual. Other Rishonim say, no, we'll make it in both ways. The fact is, yes, it could be eaten at Michael Ben Rassoy, but that's not the normal thing to eat it at that point. It's still only Achila Yedev Chak. It's only even if it reached Ben Rassoy, as long as he finished it, then it would be okay according to that opinion.
Okay.
Amar Ravina. So Ravina says
to ask her off.
Yes. Okay. Amar Ravina. So Ravina says Hilchasa. The halacha is as follows. When it comes to bread, there's three stages involved in baking bread. If a goy fired up the oven and then the Jew baked bread in it, or the other way around, a yid lit the fire and then a goy baked in it, or third possibility, if the goy lit the fire and baked the bread, but a Jew came and stirred around the coals and moved around the coals, in all of those cases, shaper dummy, all of those are fine. All of those are enough to be master. So we discussed at the beginning when we started discussing Pasakum a few days ago. I mentioned there the Ran has a shita that this is all provided that the actual kneading of the dough and all was done by a yid. If the kneading had been done by a goy, the Ran learns even if a yid was involved in any of these processes, that wouldn't be enough to be master. The halacha as brought in Shulchan Aruch is not like that. It doesn't matter even if a yid kneaded the dough and a goy baked it, as long as the Jew is involved with one of these three stages.
Which is important when you buy the frozen dough in the supermarket.
This is true. Now you notice the Gemara is mentioning over here only chos of the gecholim, which means that he actually stirred up the coals to make them actually burn better.
Right.
We don't have anything in here about mashlich kesav, about the whole concept of throwing in one piece of wood into the fire and having that be master the whole thing. So where do we get the idea that that works? So Tosfos says because there's a collection called Dvorim Shebein Bnei Bavel or Bnei Eretz Yisrael. There's a collection that goes back to the times of the Gaonim of different things in Minhagim and an understanding of Halacha that were different between the Bnei Bavel and the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. There's a couple of Tosfos on the Omer, but also Yisrael. So you have this collection. It's printed in the Marashal paper Yamshel Shloime at the end of one of the volumes, I think at the end of Bava Kamma or something. You can find it in different places. Chibukim Shebein Bnei Eretz Yisrael or Bnei Bavel, or sometimes it's called Chibukim Shebein Bnei Mizrach or Bnei Ma'ariv, the people in the east meaning Bnei Bavel and the people in the west meaning Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, one of those Chibukim is that Bnei Eretz Yisrael hold that it's not good enough to just throw one piece of wood into the fire. It has to be that you're doing something that actually makes a real difference, like what we're saying in our Gemara over here, Chosu B'Kacholim, actually stirring up the coals. On the other hand, Bnei Bavel say it's enough to throw in one piece of wood. We, in general, are Soimachan Bnei Bavel, and that's it. Therefore, when it comes to Pasakum, we have that concept that to make it Pasakum, because it's not a problem, all we need to do is that a Yid puts in one piece of wood into the fire and we're good.
When we say we, are you including people who now live in Eretz Yisrael?
Yes, because even the Bnei Eretz Yisrael of now are still descended from people who were in Golos before, and in general, for most purposes in Halacha, when there's a difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, or between Bnei Eretz Yisrael and Bnei Bavel, most of the time we follow Bnei Bavel. Yeah. Now, as far as Bishul Akum, it's a little more complicated. There you have, now our Gemara is only talking about it in terms of bread. So does the same concept apply to Bishul Akum as well, that in order to make it not Bishul Akum, all that's necessary is for a yid to do some minor thing, like throwing in a piece of wood, or maybe you need something more than that. That you have different opinions among the Rishonim. And it comes out nowadays, the difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. The Bechiris of Paskim that are Kesem when it comes to Bishul is not enough. You need that the yid actually lights the fire or does something significant as far as the fire or whatever. Kesem meaning a piece of wood. As opposed to the Ramah brings the opinion of the Mordechai and other Ashkenazic Rishonim who hold that by Tavshul it's also enough. And therefore, so it ends up being a Saudi versus Ashkenazi thing nowadays, as far as for Bishul Akum, whether it's enough to put in one piece of wood into the fire.
Today, you turn a tanner on.
If you turn the fire on, I mean, if you have a pilot light from before, if you light the pilot light, there's no question. Then you're starting the whole process. But if the pilot light's already lit, and you did, then what are you doing exactly? If you're just turning on the oven, maybe, I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. If the pilot light was lit by a goy, then you have to do then.
You can light the pilot light, and then you set for a month.
Yeah, so that's often how they do it nowadays. Yeah.
Probably.
Right. Okay. Fine. This that we were saying before, by the way, that if a yid puts down meat and a goy turns it over or whatever, and vice versa. I forgot to mention, actually, that Ramah says something in that regard that seems to be contradicted by our Gemara over here. That even there, where what does he say exactly?
You had it there.
Was here.
I had it.
So the Ramah says over here what the Ramah says is that when it comes, this that was said, we said in the Gemara before, that if it wouldn't have cooked without the goy's help, we said, for example, if it was on a basket or on a piece of wood or whatever near, not close enough to the fire, and a goy moved it closer, then that's not enough, it's still Bishul Akum. The Ramah says not, actually. The Ramah says even if it wouldn't have cooked without the help of the goy. And of course, the Shach and the Taz asks, what is he talking about? Well, how does that fit with the previous Gemara that we said over here? And the answer basically boils down to that, again, since we're saying...
The Ramah is saying that
even if it wouldn't have cooked without the goy's help, as long as a yid put it someplace, let's say, for example, in our example before, where you put the meat on the coals, let's say the coals weren't warm enough to cook it without the goy actually coming and stirring up the coals and whatever. Would we say, according to this, on the surface, it should be offered. But the Ramah is saying it's mutter. So how is that? How is the Ramah contradicting our Gemara? So again, that has to do with this whole business of Kesem. No, Once we're saying that for us Bnei Ashkenaz, it's enough to throw in a Kesem, and therefore it's Mutter, even when it comes to Bishul Akum, not just Pas Akum, well, by the same logic, therefore, so Yid was involved, because he did put the meat on there in the first place, for example. So therefore, that's the basis on which the Ramah is saying. Sodom, no, not like that, right? Yeah. Okay. Onward. Okay. Dog Malia. How about another gene? What about a salted fish? So here we're talking about a fish where once it's salted, it's already edible. So the question, so Rashi understands the question is, what if a goy did that? What if a goy salted the fish? Chizkiah shariv Rav Yechanan also. Chizkiah holds his mutter. He says that there wasn't any bishul involved. And Rav Yechanan says it's also because that's the equivalent of bishul. That's the salting it is the equivalent of bishul. Because functionally speaking, it makes it edible.
Edible is on bishul.
But that's Rav Yechanan is arguing that's the equivalent of bishul for that part. As a matter of fact, we have a halacha in various places. For example, we'll talk about it in a chulin. Maliyah hareyu kereseya. For certain purposes in halacha, as far as dinim of kashrut, something that's salted is considered as if it's boiling hot. As far as whether it absorbs taste from other things, for example, so as far as whether it can exude taste. Yes. So here we're talking about a fish. So anyway, that's how Rashi learns. Many other Rishonim, though, disagree with Rashi's understanding because they say that, after all, the fact of the matter is even Rav Yechanan can't say it's considered like cooking. And therefore, they understand. Rather, the question is, this fish, it could be eaten just like that, raw but salted. Now, if a goy were to cook it, does bishul hakum apply to it? Because do we say it was already edible before, and therefore not, or maybe not, since it was only edible al yedei hadchak. Maybe it's only something that's edible but with difficulty. And
yeah,
maybe
that's
not
sushi,
a...
Sushi, that's not even...
Yeah, okay, fine. Fine. Another case, beitza tzluya.
Say that again.
So you have two different understandings among the rishonim. Beitza tzluya, another case, you have if a goy roasts an egg, or hard boils an egg, bakapara shari v'rabi yechanan also. So bakapara says it's mutter, and rabi yechanan says it's also. So again, now Rashi understands that this machloikas is not directly related to the previous one. The question rather is, in the case of an egg, the egg is inside the shell. So the goy didn't touch the food at all. Maybe you could argue then it can't be considered bishul akum. Maybe bishul akum is only when he's touching the actual food.
Directly.
Or maybe not. Again, the other understanding among the Rishonim is it's a question where, again, an egg, you could in principle eat a raw egg, but again, it's al-yedei hadchak. It's something that it's very difficult to do. Most people will not do that.
That's
a chazan will do. A chazan will do it, but right.
Isn't that
okay. Yeah, okay.
People eat raw eggs.
Some people, but it's not very common. Okay. T. Also Rav Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported, we're in the middle of Lamed Ches on the Bay. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained that rather it was like this. The machloikas is not the way we said it before, but rather, echad dog maliach ve'echad beit tzluya, whether we're talking about a salted fish or whether we're talking about a roasted egg, not like the previous version where when it came to the fish, it was Chizkiya against Rav Yechanan, and the second one was Bar Kapara against Rav Yechanan. No. In both of them, Chizkiya and Bakapara Sharu, Chizkiya and Bakapara both said they're both mutter, but Rabbi Yechanan also, and Rabbi Yechanan said in both cases also. So similar to the previous version, the only difference is, in the first version, you have Chizkiya saying about fish and not talking about eggs, Bakapara talking about eggs and not about fish. According to Rabdimi's version, both Chizkiya and Bakapara said the same thing as far as both did. So, the Gemara tells a case about this. Rav Chia Parva Ikol Bei Resh Kavusa. Rav Chia from Parva one time visited the household of the Resh Kavusa. Amrulei Beis Atzluyamai. So they asked him what would be the din if a goy roasted an egg. Amalu. So he says, Chizkiya Bakapara Shor over Rav Yechanan Aser. We see from before that Chizkiya and Bakapara said it's Moser, whereas Rav Yechanan said it's Aser. So no problem. Ve'ein Dvarav Shalachad Makam Shnayim. You can't accept the opinion of one versus two. Rav Yechanan is outnumbered. So therefore, that's it. Then you can't. I mean, then you could. There's no problem with it. Rav Yechanan, you can't accept Rav Yechanan's opinion that it's Osir because he's outnumbered by Chizkiya and Bakapara, who says it's Mutter. However, Omolahu Rav Zvid, but Rav Zvid says to them, Loitza Tzisule, no, don't pay attention to what Rav Chia Parva is saying. Rather, Rav Yechanan said that nevertheless, even though Rav Yechanan is outnumbered, nevertheless the halacha is still like him. Maybe because Abaya held like the first version that you have in each case it's only a one-on-one machlokas, Chizkiya against Rav Yechanan and Bakapara against Rav Yechanan, and therefore there's no particular reason to accept one over the other. Yeah. So what happened was the members of the Reish Galus's household were very upset with Rav Zvid from mixing in over here. And we find in various places in Gemara, in Shas, that the Reish Galus, that people from the Reish Galus's household were not always the most honest and the most decent people. The people from the Reish Galus's household, the Rosh Galus themselves, by and large, were generally decent people, but their household members were not necessarily. So they were so angry at Rav Zvid, Ashkiyuhu Neguta Bechala, they gave him to drink a cup of vinegar, Venoch Napshe, and then he passed away. It killed him. He was machmer on them. They were upset with him, and so they did that. There is that in the back of the Gemara, one of the portion, the Parashas Yosef says, after all said and done, I mean, come on, you're going to say these people murdered him because he was machmer on them and wouldn't allow them to eat eggs roasted by goyim.
What's the worst? To eat bishul akum or to kill?
So unfortunately, sometimes you find people who are machmir in certain things that are banan, but are less careful with things that are right, like that. Right, that's true. Well, there's that also. I guess it depends. You remind me. There's an old expression that they said that they should maybe write the Aseret HaDibros into the Pinkus and some of these Kehillahs because everybody's careful about keeping all the Takonis Akol that it does in the Pinkus. Okay. Anyway, the Parashas Yosef though says maybe it means something else over here. Maybe Noch Napshe doesn't mean as it usually does in the Gemara that he passed away. Maybe it means like he was quieted down. He was appeased. In other words, what do? They pointed out to him, look, the same way as an egg, you could eat it in raw in principle, it's just al yedei hadchak. Vinegar is the same kind of thing. And therefore, in other words, don't think that you should be so machmir on eggs, just like we're not necessarily going to be so machmir on vinegar. So,
cool, guys.
And therefore, so for Nochnache, and therefore, like, he calmed down and wasn't going to be so machmir on them. Okay, that's his crap. As far as the actual halacha, by the way, you can see with the little notes over here from Ein Mishpat Ne'er Mitzvah, the answer ends up being, when it comes to a fish, the halacha is its mutter. When it comes to an egg, the halacha is its aser. Because we have over here Rav Zvid saying that Abaya said the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan with the egg. He didn't say anything one way or the other about the fish. So as far as the fish, we have the usual rule that the halacha, before Abaya and Rava's times, when you have a Rebbe versus a Talmud, and Chizki was Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe, then the halacha is usually like the Rebbe.
Can you go to the simple din? The fish is salted and then it's cooked by a non-Jew and you can eat it.
Right. So again, so one second. So that's Rashi's explanation. So Rashi's explanation over here again is no. So right. So Rashi's explanation again was that the goy salted the fish and now you want to eat it. Are you allowed to? Right. The other Rishonim say right, like what you were saying. There's no question if a goy salted the fish is mutter. The question is now that it's been salted, if a goy were to cook it, would that be considered bishulach? Doesn't matter, really. It doesn't matter. Salting is not, on the one hand, salting is not considered bishul halacha. On the other hand, once it's salted, it's already edible.
So
you get both ways, yeah. Because once it's
salted.
Okay. Onward. Tanan abanan. Hakafrisin. So now we're going to talk about a number of things from goyim that are cooked that are mutter.
No, and the egg. So
yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
So what?
So in the end, the egg is aser. So if a goy cooks an egg, then it is in fact aser. Even though it's an
egg from beginning to end. There's no
involvement.
From a Jew.
Right.
So
and
two different.
And the point is again, an egg can be eaten raw, like chazonim or whatever will do, but it's considered al yedei hadchak, and eating al yedei hadchak is not really considered something. It's not really considered something edible.
Salting a fish,
that's enough to make it edible already, and therefore, if later on a goat cooks it, then there's not an issue with it. But a raw egg is considered less edible than that. Okay. And by the way, here we're talking about a large fish. Small fish, we talk about on Amud Aleph, that the small fish are mutter for a different reason, because they're not oila al shulchan malachin. They're not something normally served at a king's table. Large ones are, right. Although even there, actually, you have Rishonim who argue that maybe it means they're not served at a king's table when they're raw, but they could be served there. They could be served there once they're salted. Okay, you have a lot of details. You have a lot of details that go into this. Yeah. All right. We learn in a Braisa. Hakafrisin, the shells around the slap fruit. So slap in English is called caper. It's called a caper berry. So it grows on a bush where you have the berries themselves are edible and they're right. They also have, there's like a shell that grows around them, which is called kaprisin, and that's also separately edible, besides the peri itself. It's hadama, right? You also have, there's the little buds, that grow on the branches, which are also edible.
Yes. Pictures?
I don't have pictures, but you can look it up sometime. Anyway. So
what do you buy in the can?
What they buy in the caper, but those are the actual berries themselves.
No.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I thought you were buying the buds there.
No, I don't think so. Maybe. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it's the actual berries.
Okay.
But I don't know. Anyway. Hakafrisin. Yes, I mean, by the way, when we say every day in Kurdish, when we say Yen Kafrisin, the usual explanation is Yen Kafrisin means wine from Cyprus. But there is an explanation that it means wine made from these Kafrisin.
Oh, it also says that the stem is charcoal.
Right. Okay. So these were cooked by a guy. Vakafloitis. And leeks, the hamtalia and hamatalia or metalia, which we're going to do, the Gemara will describe in a couple of lines what that is. The chamin and hot water, the cloyus shalahan and roasted grain of theirs. All of those were taught in their own mutter, either because they're edible raw. So like kafrisin and kafloites are all edible raw. Hamtalia, we'll see soon, is also something that's basically edible raw, or at least in cold water. Chamin is hot water. We said at the beginning of the Sturgia is, first of all, water can be drunk cold. There's no difference. And second of all, Rashi points out, in mishtanim b'riyasan idea ur, as we said at the beginning of the Sturgia, they don't get changed from the original form by heat. They go, once they cool off, they look exactly the same as they did before. And cloyus is roasted grain. The Rashi again learns they're not nishtanu, as the Gemara had said before. Other Rishonim who don't accept that, who don't accept the idea that lo nishtanu is a significant factor, they say that's rather a question of whether it's oila al shulchan malachim and whether it can be edible raw. So the Rambam learns that they're not oila al shulchan malachim. Nobody serves klayus, roasted grain, at a shulchan malachim. Or the Rambam phrases it, nobody would invite somebody over, let's sit down to eat some klayus. Other Rishonim say that maybe they would be, and therefore they explain that cloyus over here means roasted fruit, where again, the fruit could be eaten raw. Okay, anyway, so all those things are mutter on one or another of these grounds. Basic floyasura, a roasted egg, a hard-boiled egg, as we just said, is also. Shemen, Rabbi Hoda Anasi of Esdin and Nimnu Olivetiru, Goyish oil, olive oil, we said a few days ago, that Rebbe, meaning Rabbi Hoda Nasiya, and his Beis Din voted on it and permitted it. But therefore, the Gemara is going to talk about soon. What about if the oil was cooked by a goy? Does that make a difference? But first, okay. So first of all, what is hamtalia? Tanya, we learn in a brayta. He hamtalia, he pashlia, he shiosa. It has three different names. So what is it? My shiosa. Let's get to the bottom of it. What is shiosa? Amar Rabbi Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Baba Chana tells us in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. It's 40 years since this story, since this recipe came out from Mitzrayim. That's what Rabbi Baba Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yisrael. And then Rabbi Baba Chana Didei Omar. Then when Rabbi Baba Chana himself was saying it over, he said, Hoshitin Shnin, the Nafakai Ogdim Mitzrayim. It's 60 years since this came out from Mitzrayim. And the Gemara interjects, it's not an argument. We're 20 years later, Rabbi Baba Chana is quoting what Rabbi Yechanan had said in his time. 20 years later, Rabbi Baba Chana is saying it over in his own name and saying by now it's 60 years. Anyway, what is Hamtalia? What is a Shiasa, whatever? It's like this. Maisu bizra de karpasa, we take seeds of karpas, of parsley or whatever, or celery or whatever karpas is, or bizra de kitna and flax seeds, or bizra de shablalissa and seeds of shablalissa, which is tiltan, there's a name for it in English, fenugreek, which is similar to the Rashi uses over here, the word pangria, which is the same thing basically. It's a spice. Nowadays they call it chilba. They use it in Israeli cooking, they use it in Middle Eastern cooking. Chilba, it's called. The proper term for it in English is fenugreek.
What's
taking on the Gemara? The Gemara says
shablalissa.
And nowadays they call it chilba. Anyway. So they take these three kinds of seeds, they soak them in some kind of liquid together, they soak them together in warm water, they leave the seeds in the water until they start sprouting. Then they take new barrels. They fill up the barrels with water, they soak earth, the clay, in these containers, and they take these seeds, which have already started sprouting, and stick them to this clay in these containers over there. Then when a person goes into the bathhouse, by the time the person gets out of the bathhouse, the seeds are growing so fast under these conditions that they're already starting to blossom. And then you eat from them after you come out of the bathhouse, and the kairi, and it cools you off, because the bathhouse is a very hot place, especially nowadays, think of like a shit spot or whatever, but especially the way bathhouses were built in the old days, we had underfloor heating, it was extremely hot in there. In fact, in Brachas, the Gemara talks about the danger that a person could be exposed to if the floor caved in and all of a sudden you're among the hot water and coals and whatnot. Basically, they had like coals underneath. So the Gemara mentions over there special brachos that you have to say once you come out of the bathhouse safely. So it was a very hot place. So like this, you need something to cool you off.
That's the bracha for the bathroom too.
No, that's not quite the same.
Okay.
So they would eat from it. The kairi, and it would cool them off. Mi binsa de reshayu ad chukra de karayu. From the hair on their head, all the way down to the toenails on their feet. So it would cool off the whole body. So that's what this hamtalia or pashlia or shiyata is. The point being, in other words, that now like this, the normal recipe was to soak it in warm water. Let's say instead of goy, you put it into hot water. It wouldn't be an issue because again, either it's something that could have been just as well made with warm water, so therefore it's like nechal kamos shurchai, something that could have been eaten raw, or it's not oilal shulchan malachim, it's not something you would ever serve at a king's table. And therefore, one way or the other, it's mitzvah. Amar Rav Ashi, Amar li Rav Chanina. So Rav Ashi says, Rav Chanina told me when this story was told over, milin. It's words. It's not possible that these plants would blossom that fast, okay, even under such conditions. But Amrila bim milin. Others say that what Rav Chanina said is not milin, not that it's just words, but rather bim milin. It must have been done through kishuf. It must have been done through words of kishuf. Otherwise, it couldn't have happened under natural circumstances that fast. But that's why we're mentioning that it came out of Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, we know they were experts in kishuf. So yeah.
By the way, the caper that you buy is the bud.
It is the bud, okay.
And the fruit is a different thing. It's not so common.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
All right. Tanan Abanam. We learn in a Braisa. The Hakuspan shall over to Gekovim. Kuspan of Goyim. Now, Kuspan is like this. In those days, the normal kind of beer that they made was made out of dates. So eventually, so you take the dates and you brew them into beer. Afterwards, you have tzolos left over. You have the leftovers of the dates. What do you do with them? You cook them in hot water and make some kind of food out of them. There's still nutrition in them. Or actually use the expression v'chiltinosim, which means like they'd put them into boiling hot water, and then they eat it. So this kuspan of goyim, shahuch muhamin, the yodav dola, if they were heated up in hot water in a big pot, osir, then it's osir, the yodav tana mutter, but if it was done in a small pot, then it's mutter. The ezui yodav tana, so what's the definition of a small pot for this purpose? Amrabiyane, kosha in tzipur dror yochal likonis b'secha. A small pot, the definition is that the top of it, the opening of it, is too small for a tzipor dror, which is some type of small bird, like a sparrow or something like that, to be able to get into it. Right. Well, the pot could be shaped like this. It has a narrow top,
yeah,
and then it widens out on the bottom. But the point being, in other words, why are we worried if tipper drawer is big enough for a tipper drawer to get in? Because then, can see a tipper drawer is the goy might have cooked a tipper drawer or something of that size in there, and therefore would make the pot safe. Yeah, there are different understandings among the notes of Kalim on Shulchan Aruch. The Shach and the Taz, I think, discussed the question whether a tzipor dror itself is a kosher bird or a treifa bird, but whatever. The point is that a goy may have cooked something treif in there, a tzipor dror itself, or something the size of it or whatever, and therefore it would make the kuspan treif. So if the opening of the pot is too small for a tzipor dror to get in, then... That's what I'm saying. You have the so it depends. We have to figure out which bird is what do we call it nowadays? What's it called in English? What's its scientific name? You know, maybe it could be a sparrow. It could be whatever, some kind of small bird. Okay. So the question is, why is that good enough? The Duma Admuye Admua Vailua. So what? So maybe a guy, fine. He didn't put a whole super drawer in there. He could have cut it up into pieces and put it in there, and you still have the pot that traces in it. Ella, no, we have to change it. Rather, kol she'en roish tzipor dror yochal likonis b'secha. If the opening of the pot is so small that the head of a tzipor dror can't get in there, you're not going to cut it up into smaller pieces than that. So therefore, we know there's no treifus. But if the opening is any larger, then you have a problem because he might have cooked treifus in the pot, and therefore the kuspan will become off. Okay, the question is, v'haltanya, but we learn in another braisa, it doesn't matter. No, that's fine. The kuspan itself is again. You took dates and you brewed them to make beer. So now you have these little bits and pieces left. They're small enough that you can just pour them in. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, Valtanya, but we learn in a braisa achas yodav dorel of achas yodav tana mutter. Whether it's a big pot or a small pot, it's mutter. So what about the tzipor dror problem? The answer is like Kasha. It's not a contradiction between the two braises. Hawk mandama noisin tamlis gam osir. The first braise that follows the opinion that noisin tamlis gam, when something gives an objectionable taste into the food, it's still osir if the thing was originally osir. Hawk mandama noisin tamlis gam osir. The second braise is according to the opinion that such a thing is mutter. Now, what's the noisin tamlis gam here? First of all, we're going to learn the details about noisin tamlis gam. We're going to have a long sugya about it towards the end of the Masechta, in another month, says Hashem. Appropriately enough, right about Pesach time. But in this case, so Rashi explains like this. One rule as far as Nos and Tam is, if the pot was last used, how long ago was the pot last used for today? Rashi learns over here, and also in that sugya over there, that if it was overnight, then already the taste that's embedded in the walls of it is already pogum. It's not a good taste anymore. Most other Rishonim understand rather you need 24 hours. And that's the halacha. Be that as it may, if we assume, therefore, that this pot has not been used in the last 24 hours, then the taste that's in it is already pogum. Therefore, it's a nice and timeless gam. If any of that taste gets out into the korsban, it'll be an off taste anyway. The first braisa says, nevertheless, it's still osur. The second braisa holds its mutter. Because as long as we figure that the pot is not ben yomer, that it wasn't used in the last 24 hours.
So the first braisa
says it doesn't matter, it's still osur. And the second braisa would say it's mutter. Many other rishonim, though, disagree with that premise. They say, because the premise that we're saying is that stam kalim einin b'nei yomim, that we can assume that the pot was not used in the last 24 hours. Many rishonim hold, you can't say that. You have a suffix whether it was used in the last 24 hours, and you have a real issue. Rather, the Rambam and other rishonim understand the reason why it's nice and tamed of gam over here is because the taste of meat doesn't really blend well with the taste of korsban. So therefore, it's pagam, even if it was just now used for today for meat. You're still going to have the taste. When it gets into the korsban, it's going to be an objectionable taste. It's not going to be a good taste. And therefore, again, according to the second braisa, such a thing as mutter. Whereas the first braisa holds that not. So in other words, it's not a question of 24 hours or not. It's a matter of that the two things mixed together, the blend of meat taste and korsban taste, is not a good taste, and therefore such a thing is not awesome.
That's
the thing, yes. After 24 hours, it definitely gives out a bad taste no matter what's being cooked in it. Well, with the exception of, we're going to talk later on about sharp things. We'll get later on to chilsis, so we'll deal with that.
Hold by the taste. How long does it need to blend?
Rashi says that once it's overnight, then it's already pogrom, that the taste is already ruined. The taste is already not a good taste anymore, and therefore if it gets mixed in. Most other rishonim say 24 hours. This is where we have the whole concept that we talk about in halacha, whether a keli is ben yomer or not ben yomer, which is very negeya in many areas of kashrus. Ben yomer means it was used in the last 24 hours. Ain't it ben yomer means it's not. It's relevant as far as kashering dishes. It's relevant as far as if milk falls into a meat pot or vice versa. It's relevant if something is cooked in the wrong kind of utensil. And here we see it's also negeya to questions of taruvus, of mixtures, of trefus.
It's never a question of 1 hour or 2 hours.
No, definitely not. According to Rashi, overnight is the minimum, and according to everybody else, 24 hours.
Any less than that?
Right. But again, according to the Rambam, the vote is, even if the pot was just freshly used, it's still mutter. It's not the right thing to do, but it's allowed because the taste of the meat mixed with the taste. No, you're mixing up two different things. The taste of the meat itself is still a good taste. If you were to cook something that would blend well with that taste, it would become osur. Korsban doesn't blend well with that taste. It's a nice and timeless gap insofar as the korsban is concerned.
So
therefore,
it's the fact of well blending that counts.
It's the question of what. It's the question of what kind of taste is. What kind of taste is this? Is this something that gives the korsban a good taste? Then it would make it osur if it was within 24 hours. Okay. Or does it give it a bad taste? And then we're saying that it's considered pogrom, and therefore it would be mutter.
Like garlic,
the logic is the logic is that the taste is only osur when it's nice and tam, the shvach, only when it's something that gives a good taste or at least a neutral taste or whatever, not something where it makes it less, not something where it makes it inedible.
Intuitive.
Yeah.
What is an intuitive? It's taste. The
because you have taste that it's not roi l'maichol b'nei adam. People don't normally eat korsban that has a meat taste in it because it tastes bad.
Right.
Okay, so therefore.
It's not the question.
We're not saying to do a lot of chiller.
Yeah, but.
So that's what we're saying.
I don't see that.
Okay, that's the logic. All right, Bo Minei Mirabasi. They asked Rabasi a question as follows. Hai Ashini Shliki Ga'amorimai. What is the din about these dates that are cooked by Goyim? Is there an issue of Bishal Akamuna? And they clarified the question as follows. Huye lo Tiboyloch. Oh, you know what? I just skipped a whole few lines. Yeah. Amar Rav Sheshes, Hai Mishcha Shlika Darmoy Osir. Rav Sheshes says oil that was cooked by Goyim is Osir. So we said before oil, Rav Yehuda Nasir, and it's based in Ramathir. But what about if the oil was cooked by Goyim? Rav Sheshes says it should be Osir. Amar Rav Safra, but Rav Safra says no. Why should it be Osir? L'may Nechoshla. What are you concerned about? E Nishum Iyaruvi. Are you concerned that there might be mixed in a taste over there from whatever they cooked in the pot before? It won't misrestore you. It ruins the taste. Again, it's nois and tamlus gam. The halacha is nois and tamlus gam is allowed. So therefore, that won't be a reason to ask it. The taste of the meat would ruin the taste of the oil. Therefore, the point is you're not having hana from the taste of the tzreis. It's not a hana to taste such a thing because it tastes bad. So therefore, that won't be an issue. Emission bishula over to chavim. Are you worried about the problem of bishulakum? Oil can be used raw. You can dip your bread in it raw. You don't have to cook it. Iruvi was not a question of taste from the Keli. Iruvi was what if he mixed in wine into it, where therefore it would be Yainessa. So let's go that over again. Lamai Nechushla, what are we concerned about? Imishum Iruvi, are we concerned that the goy may mix in wine into the oil when he's cooking it? He won't. Misra Sori, because it'll ruin the taste. It'll damage it, so therefore the goy is never going to put in wine in the first place. Is it a problem of bishulakum? No. Nechol k'moshu chai. Nechol k'moshu chai. Oil can be used raw. It doesn't have to be cooked. Therefore, it's not considered bishulakum, as we said before. Are you worried about the guy cooked something previously in this pot, which is author, and now it's going to blend with the oil? Again, nois in tam l'fgamhu. It's an off taste. Therefore, it's not also. It's a destructive taste. Therefore, it's not also because you're not having an argument. Or mutter. Therefore, however you look at it, it should be mutter. And that is, in fact, the halacha. Olive oil cooked by goyim is mutter.
Okay. As long as they don't put...
As long as they don't put other ingredients in it. As long as they don't put other trefa ingredients in it that would make it taste good or that would otherwise have a good effect on it. Right. Okay. Bomenem Rabasi. Hani ahini shliki dar morimai. What about these dates that are cooked by goyim? So let's clarify the question. Now, shliki means they're cooked. Shlokas is what we started out with. Now, there's no question about ones that are sweet. There's no question it's mutter because they can be eaten raw. And we just said before, we said at the beginning of the sugya, anything that can be eaten raw, bishalakum is not an issue. Miriri loyti boilach devadei asiri. The ones that are bitter before they're cooked, there's no question they're also because they can't be eaten raw. And apparently, they're oilach shulchan malachim. The question is the middle one, the ones that are nishtahin nishtaher, right? They're edible, but ayden chak. They're edible, but it's a little difficult too because there's some bitterness in them. What's it in? So Rav Asi tells them, why are you asking the question? The Rebbe author, my Rebbe said it's author, Umanu, and who is Rav Asi's Rebbe? Levi. That is the famous Tana / Amorda Levi. Paskin that it's also. So that's it, it's also. Because if it's only edible idea chak, that's not considered that it's edible raw, therefore bishulakum applies there. Yeah.
So it has to be edible raw always.
Yes.
Anytime.
Okay. How about another din? What about shisaw? What about shisaw, which is, Rashi described, they take, again, so you had, they could roast grain, like we described before, that you take grain kernels and put them in an oven. Now, what they can do then is they grind that up into flour, and then they mix it with some kind of liquid. So sometimes
they roast them,
then they grind them, right. And they have a sweetish taste to them.
Right.
So as we're going to see in the Gemara, they can be made out of that. For that purpose, you can roast grain or you can roast lentils or other kinds of beans. And then if they're too sweet, if it comes out too sweet, then what they would do is with the liquid they would mix it in is vinegar. So what's the din as far as that? As far as bishulak? Rav Shori Avod Shmuel V'Levi Asri. Rav said that Shisa made by Goyim is Mutter. The father of Shmuel and Levi say it's also. So let's clarify. B'chiti b'thayri kol amal etzligi d'shori. When it's made with wheat or barley, which normally you don't put in vinegar then there's no question that everybody would agree it's Mutter. B'tzlofchi, on the other hand, if it's made from lentils. If they make it with vinegar, then there's no question it's also, because we said earlier that vinegar of goyim is also, because it's made from wine. If there is, that's also. Rather, the machlokas would be, what if it's made out of lentils, but instead of putting it in vinegar, this particular person decided to put it in water? Is it mutter or not? Mar sova gazrinin ha atuha. So now, avur de Shmuel and Levi, why are they saying it's also? Because they're saying it's too easily confused with if you're allowed to eat the one that's made in water, you may come to eat the drink, whatever, the one that's made with vinegar instead, which would be also.
The smell wouldn't make the difference?
You wouldn't necessarily. You're able to buy shisa from goyim made out of lentils. You're not going to necessarily pay attention, well, this one was made with water, this one was made with vinegar. Well, my stuff, like that's written, whereas Rav holds that there's not a problem, we don't need to make such a deal.
So you might recognize that it's vinegar, but you'll think it's mutter because you're allowed to.
Because you're allowed to have, you know, you grew up knowing that you're allowed to have shisa made out of lentils, and you're not going to have stuff as different. The Ikadamri, another version of the Machlokas, v'tlofchi de maya kolam le'tzvi gedoster, if it's made out of lentils and water, then there's no question it's oster, because we are concerned about that. Normally with lentils, it's made with vinegar, because as Rashi said before, with lentils, it comes out extra sweet, and therefore you put it in vinegar to kill the taste. But the normal process is vinegar. Therefore, we're not going to allow it with water, because then you're going to think you can also buy it with vinegar. So the question rather would be, according to the second version, machlokas would be if it's made out of wheat or barley. Mar Stava Gazrin and Ha Atu Ha. So Avur, Shmuel, and Levi would be saying that we're going to be gozer, you're not supposed to drink the shisa made out of wheat or barley, even though that's always made with water, because that may lead you to drinking the one from lentils, which would be also. Or Mar Stava La Gazrin, and whereas Rav would hold, it's not, we don't make such a gzer.
Isn't it a
xeron on xera? No, because if we're saying that you're afraid you're gonna do the one with wheat and barley, and then from that you're gonna come to do the normal one with lentils, which is made with vinegar, that's outright also. Vinegar of grain is outright also. That's not yet. Hmm. Amar Rav. So Rav says, by the way, since we're talking about these different kind of shisa, you can find actually a pasuk that refers to them. Trei minish shisa shoda barzilai hagiladi l'dav. Barzillai HaGiladi sent two types of shisa to David. Barzillai HaGiladi is a character, so you have the period when David was running away from Avshalom, when Avshalom had revolted and then set himself up as king in Yerushalayim. So David and all the ones who were still loyal to him went and left Yerushalayim, and it took a few months till they finally defeated Avshalom. Meanwhile, at one point, David had to escape to Edrei Yarden, because otherwise Avshalom's people would have gotten him on this side of the Yarden.
His own son.
There was a medrash that where David actually is thankful that of all people that Hashem told him that there's going to be a rebellion against him. He was happy that at least it's his own son, because his own son will have a shtikah rahmanas on him. As in fact, I mean, I don't want to get too far off topic, but you do find in the Pesukim over there that you had Achitofel advising Avshalom how to go about and do a sudden strike and kill David. And Avshalom is not necessarily, I don't know if I accept that. Let me hear from Hoshaya Arki. And Hoshaya Arki was actually working as a double agent, ended up giving him a different piece of advice, which Avshalom accepted. The pasuk says over there it was Min HaShemayim, so that David should be saved. But the Bederach HaTeva, it was also because Avshalom himself wasn't necessarily so necessarily keen on killing his father. Right. Anyway, the point is for our Gemara, when David was in Edrei Yarden over there, a guy called Barzillai HaGiladi comes out and greets him and brings him a huge amount of food. That Barzillai was a very rich guy. Later on, you find in the Pesukim that later on, after Avshalom was killed, and then Avshalom is going back to Yerushalayim, he offers Barzillai to come back with him to Yerushalayim and be his honored guest. And Barzillai says, "I don't want to. I'm too old. You can have my son will be a member of your court." And later on, you have it in the Naftarah, Parshas Vayechi. One of the last instructions that David gives Shlomo is remember to be kind to Barzillai Giladi and his descendants because of how he helped me at that time.
He was from Gilad,
yeah. Okay. So two kinds of shisa Barzillai HaGiladi gave to David. As the pasuk says as follows, that they brought as follows, mishkav, beds, vesapos, and different other kind of kalim that they needed. Rashi relates the word sapos to shomrei hasaf, like in Megillah Esther. Shomrei hasaf would mean the people who were guarding the kalim of the palace. Anyway, that's sapos. Oklei yotzer and kalim made by a potter, so earthenware kalim. Chitim ustaorim, wheat and barley. Chitim ustaorim, whatever. Vekemach and flour. Vekoli, which means roasted grain. Opoil and beans. Vaadoshim and lentils. Vekoli, and again koli. So why is it mentioning koli twice? Because there was the one kind of koli made from chitim and sa'arim that I mentioned right before that in the pasuk, and the other kind that's made out, and the other kind made out of adoshim that I mentioned right before.
Why is there any distinction?
Because that's what we just said before. There's two different types of koli. You have the kind made from wheat and barley, and you have the kind
of wheat.
The point is, wheat is wheat. Barley is barley. But the point is, you have one kind that's made with wheat and barley and mixed with water. You have another kind made from lentils and usually is mixed with vinegar. Barzillai HaGiladi brought both of them to David. And the Gemara says, what about this machlokas that we said before? Nowadays they bring out baskets upon baskets of this shisa stuff to the marketplaces of Nahada. that are made by goyim, the less the chayish lahadavur de shmuel v'levi, and nobody is concerned about avur de shmuel and levi's opinion. They hold that shtisa is mutter. Actually, what it is the rish paskins according to the second lashon, because in general, when you have two lashonis in the gemara, we usually paskin like the second one, which would mean that the ones that they're bringing out to the marketplace of Nahadah are the ones made out of wheat and barley. So the ones made out of lentils are taka off limits, whether they're made with vinegar or water. But the ones made with wheat and barley, we don't go so far as to make such a sale. But they're always made with water, right? Yeah.
They're cooked or they're not cooked?
The grain is roasted to begin with. Apparently, this isn't so much an issue of vishal akum. This is more a question of because of the vinegar. Yeah.
But they used to soak them.
That's not enough to be considered vishal.
In vinegar?
Yeah, well, vinegar from grain is also, that's what we said, wine vinegar. Yeah. Then we said in the Mishnah, Kvashim Shadarkan Lotus to Seichan Yayim. We said another thing of Goyim that's also to eat, but is Mutabana. Remember, all the things in our Mishnah were things that are also to eat, but are Mutabana, unlike the previous Mishnah. So we said another one was Kvashim Shadarkan Lotus to Seichan Yayim, pickled things that it's normal to put wine into them. So now, why should it be Mutabana if there's wine in them? That only means that it's normal to put wine in them, but this particular batch, you don't know whether it has wine. But if you know there's wine in there, then there's no question. It's also even bahana, because goyish of wine is also bahana. So the question then becomes, what about, though, we also said in the Mishnah that muryas, the fish juice that's prepared by goyim, is muta bahana, even though they often put wine in it. So, and it's also therefore considered yadua. The answer is that's not a problem because hasam la'avuri zuama, because there they put in the wine in order to get rid of the fish smell. So therefore, Rashi learns, in other words, therefore it's considered as if the wine is just going li'ibud, as if the wine like no longer exists in there, because you're not putting it in. The taste of the wine apparently is destroyed by the fish. Yeah. So therefore that's not an issue. Therefore it's mutter. Here, on the other hand, they put in, when we're talking about things that are pickled and they put in wine to improve the taste. Well, then you have actual taste of wine in there, and it's not going li'ibud, therefore it's also b'hana. Okay. Rav Yechanan says, no, I feel it'd be a dua nami mutter. No, even if you know for a fact they put wine in it, it'll still be, into these pickled things, it'll still be mutter. So then the question is, ma'ishinom imurias to le'meyer da'also b'hana? So why is it different than murias? Where according to the mayor, it's actually also bahana because of the wine they put in. There it's yodua. Here it's also yodua. So why over here are we just saying everybody agrees it's only also bahila? And over there you have the mayor saying it's also bahana. The answer is hotem yodia mamasha, because the difference is over there when it comes to murias, you know there's an actual mamashas of it, because what do you have? You're dipping. You use murias as a dipping sauce. You dip bread or whatever into it. So therefore, you actually feel the wine in there. The wine is actually getting eaten as part of it, as opposed to a hachala yadiya mamashan. Here, the mamashas of it is not really known in the sense you have pickles or other things that were pickled or whatever. You're not eating the brine. You're not eating the liquid that they were pickled in. You're eating the actual pickle itself that was in there. So therefore, Reb Yechanan is saying, therefore, it's less of an issue.
Even though there is wine over there,
yodua that there's wine in there. Nevertheless, again, it's also ba'achila, because the fact is you would be eating wine, but we're not going to go so far as asking it ba'ana. Because the fact of the matter is that when the vegetables are eaten, you're eating the vegetables, you're not really eating the wine. What? Yeah, but no, you can sell it, for example. You can give it away to a goyish friend of yours, whatever. Yeah. Then we said in the mission, if it's tris trufa, another thing that is also to eat, but is mutar b'hana, is chopped up tris, which we said in the mission, tris is some kind of fish, a tuna fish or something, which is sold chopped up, and therefore it's not, you can't tell whether it has fins or scales. And another thing we said is that the seer that does not have a kilbis swimming around in it, which we talked in the Mishnah a lot, what a kilbis is, either it actually says a kilbis is a trefa fish, but that one that lives only in the seer of kashra fish, or other Rishonim understand that a kilbis itself is a kashra fish, and if there is a label, whatever it is, if you don't have it in there, then you don't know what kind of seer it is. And the Mishnah continued, another thing that you're not allowed to eat that comes from goyim is chilek. So my chilek, so what is chilek? We mentioned it a few days ago in the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman bar Abba Amar Rav, Zu Sultanis. This is a type of fish called sultani, which is it's a smallish kind of fish which comes in very large. It comes in very large schools. So it could be something like herring, or it could be something like herring, or sardines, or anchovies, or whatever. The point is, and we're named ma'asura. The problem is, when it's little, it doesn't have scales, and therefore we're named ma'asura. So why did that? We're named ma'asura. Why is it also named she'ervoina olaima? Because the mixture comes up with it. When a person goes and catches fish, they put out a net and they scoop off a whole bunch of salt on it. There may be other kinds of fish, trefa fish, mixed into it, and you can't tell because none of them have scales. Therefore, it's also to buy skillet from goyim because of the problem that some today's fish may be mixed in there. We learned the other day in the Gemara, we had a braisa that mentioned that if you buy it from an expert, from a mumcha, then it's allowed because they'll be careful. They know that the taste of kosher fish and today's fish is very different, and if you mix them together, then it won't taste good. Therefore, they'll make sure to pick any non-sultanis and any non-chilek out of the mixture.
Today also, when we fish. Fish and
indeed, and for that reason, and that is why things like tuna fish need a hefsher. Aside from the fact that they don't have fins and scales, because they're canned, there's also the issue to make sure that there's no dolphins or whatever in there yet, because that makes sense. Exactly. Okay. So now we're going to talk a little bit about kosher fish. Now we know fish have to have fins and scales in order to be kosher, and technically, actually, the Gemara discusses in Chulin, every fish that has scales also has fins. So therefore, once you see scales on it, then you know it's mutter. Suppose a fish does not have scales yet, but eventually it is going to grow them.
He's a young fish?
It's a young fish, yeah. You're going to have sultanis for her office, for example, sultanis in an office. Hares and mutter, they're mutter even though they don't have scales yet, because eventually they will have scales. The species has scales, right? Now, how do we get that? How do we get that it should be mutter if it doesn't have scales yet? Tosfos points out, because since the expression in the pasuk is v'cholasher ein loy snafe v'kaskeset, the word eight, now the positive says any fish that has snappers, that's fins and scales, you can eat. And then anyone that's ain loy, that does not have fins and scales, so the Tosfos points out, Tosfos points out that we find in a number of places in Shas, when the positive says ain loy, we douse in it ayin olive, check into it. We say, for example, by Yibum, vein ain loy, it means not just that he doesn't have a son, but also no daughter and no grandson and no granddaughter and no whatever, 10 generations down or whatever. The same thing over here. Ayin olav, check into it. Is this a fish that is never going to have scales, or is it one that eventually, if it was allowed to mature, would have scales? Okay. So such a thing is
mutter.
It's going to have scales, right. Yesh lo achshav v'osid l'hosher b'shasha olam anayam. What about the other way around? If it has scales now, and eventually when it's caught, it's going to drop off its scales when it's caught. You're going to kunas v'afunas k'tas v'tzias v'aktas v'tzias v'usnas. These are all names of different kinds of fish. These are all names of different kinds of fish. Some Rishonim say in Persian, some say in Greek. Whatever it is, they're names of different kinds of fish. Utna, some people say, might be tuna. The katas is interesting actually, because it seems similar to a word in Greek, xiphias, ziphias, or whatever, which means a sword, and therefore it might mean a swordfish. So that gets into the whole question whether swordfish is mutter. Now you had kahilas back. It's fins it has. Scales, now that's the question. A swordfish, as I understand it, it has scales when it's little, but when it grows up, it doesn't have those scales. It doesn't have those scales anymore. Instead, it grows these kind of like bony projections on its skin, which are not considered scales in halacha.
Scales have to cover the fish completely.
No, it's not that they have to cover the fish completely. It's that they have to be easily removable. Kaskesis is related to the word Vashirian kaskasim ulovish that described by Goliath, for example, that he's wearing scale armor where you have the scales can easily be removed from the armor. So the same thing, for them to be considered scales, they have to be removable from the skin. If they're not, if you can only remove them with tearing the skin, it's not considered scales. So now swordfish are like that. Apparently they have actual scales when they're little, but they lose them when they get older and they develop instead these projections. There were kahilas in the old days that considered them mutter. I believe, for example, the Knesset Hagdola and the Pri Chodesh, I think, talk about it and say that in their kahilas they had a tradition that is one of the fish mentioned in our Gemara over here, and they lose their scales when they're caught, and therefore they're mutter. when I was much younger, actually, I read a story in that vein where Rav takes his son to the docks over there and then puts a scarf or something inside the net where they're catching the fish, and later on the swordfish are caught, and he checks the scarf and finds it's full of little scales that the fish shed while they were fighting being caught in the net. Anyway, so there were kahilas where they were master, right? In America also, in the old days, there were rabbanim who said it's mutter. Eventually, the consensus became among the poskim that given that they don't have scales when they get older, then no, we can't accept it. We have to say whatever it was they were eating in these other kahilas was some related fish, not swordfish, and therefore we take it as a given nowadays that swordfish is chosen. Yeah.
Also, the sturgeon is a similar
thing. So sturgeon is a similar thing? Okay, I didn't know it has scales when it's little, but okay. I guess.
It has scales, and then it doesn't have scales. I think it used to be mutter. And same thing.
It's possible. You have a number of fish like that. There's a type of fish that the Bali Atosis talk about called a barbuta, which I think some people say might be a sturgeon or something, where some of the Bali Atosis said it's mutter. On the other hand, others said that no, whoever eats from this barbuta is not going to get to eat from the Sudas Leviosum because they're eating traces. So yeah, it's not so simple. Okay, anyway. So those kinds of things, again, a fish that has scales while it's in the sea, but then when you catch it, it loses them, like these five that I mentioned in the Mishnah, all of those are also mutter.
So it has to have scales.
It has to have scales within the sea, right. Achriz Rav Abohu B'Kesari. Rav Abohu one time made an announcement in the city of Kesari, where he was the Rosh Hashiva. Cesaria in Eretz Yisrael, yeah. Kirvei Dogim, fish guts, v'ubron, and fish roe, what do you call fish eggs, like caviar or whatever. Nikochen, mikol adam, they can be bought from anybody. Even from Goyim. Why? Because the Chazaka over here in Caesarea is they're coming only from Plusa and Aspamia, which are places. Aspamia is Spain. Plusa is maybe Pelusium in Egypt. Whatever it is. And today for fish are not common in those places. So therefore, any fish guts or any fish eggs that they bring from those places must necessarily be from kosher species. Obviously, nowadays, not necessarily the case, because caviar, for example, is made from sturgeon, most of which are tureta species.
Well, maybe it was mutter then.
Maybe, right. So, no, that, but also, I mean, there's different kinds of caviar.
And also, the sturgeon, isn't that in Russia?
Maybe, I don't know.
In the
Black Sea, I think.
Water,
yeah,
so
I think you're right.
Spain, maybe it didn't get there.
Could be.
Yeah,
okay.
So,
Kihod Amar Abaya.
Yeah,
okay.
So
I don't know. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So therefore, they're right. Ki hodu amar Abaya, similar to what we find Abaya saying, hai tzachanta de bavna rasharya. The tzachanta, which is another word for the chilek of our Mishnah, even though we said in our Mishnah you can't buy chilek from goyim because of the problem, there might be trace of fish mixed in here, but the tzachanta, the chilek that comes from the river Bav, which is someplace in Babel. No, it's some kind of small fish. But the tzachanta that comes from Bavnar, that comes from the river Bav, sharya is mutter. My time. Now, why should it be mutter? What is there about Bav Nahara that there won't be tureta fish in it? Ilema Mishum Dirudzifi Maya. You're going to say because the current in the river Bav is a very fast current. And then you're going to argue Vahai Dog Tome. Then when it comes to tureta fish, given to Lesle Chuta Shedra, since they don't have a spinal cord, generally, kosher fish all have an actual bony skeleton. Many popular kinds of tureta fish don't. They just have cartilage as their skeleton and shark. Sharks are an example. Catfish, I think, also. I'm not sure, but whatever. A lot of common today for food fish do not have an actual skeleton made out of bones, just out of cartilage. So the argument would be, maybe you would say that an animal that doesn't have a skeleton made out of bones is not going to be able to swim in a fast current.
Fish swim slowly.
Okay. So the question is, v'hokachazin and dekoi. But the fact of the matter is, we see that there are other rivers that have fast currents, and today for fish do live there. So that doesn't work. So no, maybe you're going to argue the reason is because Bav Nahara is salty water. The high dog tummy came to less like kalfi. Since tureta fish do not have scales, the duchted and melichi maya le matikoi, then they can't live in places where the water is salty because the scales are supposed to protect them. But no, the hokachazin in the koi. Again, we see that there are fish without scales that live in salty water, so that doesn't work. No, the reason must be because the mud of that river, Bav Nahara, is not conducive to tureta fish growing over there. For whatever reason, if a tureta fish comes into that river and tries to lay its eggs, the mud over there is not conducive to them growing yet. So therefore, of necessity, only kosher fish live in that river. Therefore, you can buy chilek, tachanta, whatever from that river, and there's no problem. However, Amar Ravina, but Ravina says eventually time changed. Ha'idna, nowadays, after that, after Abayah's time, to Kashafki be Nahal Goyza and Nahal Gamda, that the river Goyza and the river Gamda pour into that river. They diverted those rivers to that they flow into Bab Nahara. Asiri, now it's also because you have Shefa fish living in those rivers, and some of them make it into Bab Nahara. So even if they don't breed over there, they still, you have them mixed in among the Chilik, and therefore you have the same problem as in our Mishnah.
So that's the conclusion.
That's the conclusion, yeah. So that, but that's the basic idea. If you have an area where only kosher fish can grow, then you don't have a problem. Once you have that shayfa fish can intrude over there, then you have an issue.
So that's why you need a hefshir.
Right. Amar Abaya. So now, okay, more dinim about kosher fish. Amar Abaya. Hai chamora de yamashori. The donkey of the sea is kosher. Hold on. Tora diyama osur, but the ox of the sea is osur. The simonach, and the way to remember, which is which? Tomei toher, toher tomei. The one that's tomei on dry land, the donkey, is kosher in the water, and the one that's toher on dry land, the ox is tomei in the water. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea, you know, we have the water is almodes kafya, the hidden world, and then dry land is almodes dalya, the revealed world. Sometimes we have that, yeah, things are the opposite in the hidden worlds of in the hidden worlds. Well, of course, things are opposite to the way they are in the revealed world that we live in. But what is a chamora diyama and what is a tora diyama? So there are some of them of Poroshim explain that it actually means, first of all, Rashi points out, the Gemara tells us in Poland, that every kind of creature that lives on dry land, you have a parallel creature living in the water except for the cholda. A cholda is a weasel or a squirrel or some kind of creature like that. So you have, therefore, there's some kind of thing called a sea ox. So some of them of Poroshim explain that it actually means a creature that has legs and lives in the water. And in that case, if it has legs, what about? So the vote would be, since the Gemara tells us in Cholin, since we're told in Cholin that anything that has scales automatically is kosher because it automatically has fins, then the vote is, according to that, this Chamora Diyama, even though it has legs, it also has scales and therefore it would be mutter, based on that rule. Other Meforshim disagree with that, other Poskim disagree with that conclusion. They say the fact of the matter is it has to be a fish, not some kind of amphibian or whatever, so even if it has scales, no good. And therefore, they understand that the Chamora Diyama and the Tora Diyama are certain kinds of fish. I've seen an explanation, Chamora Diyama might be a cod, and then Tora Diyama might be a porpoise or some creature like that. Whatever. The point is that they have to be the actual fish that live their whole lives in the water and have fins and in order to be kosher have scales. There is in that connection. There's a fascinating discussion where at one point they brought the Tosfos Yom Tov a creature. But they once brought the Tosfos Yom Tov a specimen of a creature which they called Stinkus Marinus.
Stinkus Marinus.
And nowadays, the scientific name for it now is a little bit different. It's also a Stinkus, whatever. Anyway, it was a creature. They told them it lives in the Spanish Sea. I don't know. Pastures, the Spanish Sea means the areas near where Spain conquered in the Americas, like Central and South America, or whatever. Anyway. Whatever it is, the point is, it had scales, it did not have fins, instead it had things like little tiny legs, so it looked a little bit more like a lizard, but they told them it lives in the water, the flesh of it is poisonous, however, they know how to extract the poison, and then they can use it for useful medicinal purposes. So the question is it kosher or not? So the Tosfos Yom Tov discusses, what about that you have the rule that if it has scales but not fins, then we're saying that it should be kosher because anything that has scales has fins. So what about, does that apply to this? Well, maybe not. Maybe that rule is not necessarily meant to be 100%. Maybe it's only meant to be the majority of the time it's like that. Maybe it's different. Maybe also other achronim took up the whole point after the Tosfos Yom Tov also. One discussion is maybe since we're saying that the animal is poisonous, maybe it's not included in the rule. Maybe the Gemara, maybe when Chazal told us the rule that anything that has scales has fins, they meant edible. They meant edible creatures. They didn't mean something like this Shinkus Marinus, which is poisonous. And there's a good deal of discussion about it among the achronim.
It still exists, yeah.
I think nowadays they do identify it as some kind of lizard, but I don't know about the fact that it lives in the water. But
probably doesn't live in the water.
It may live close to the water, or maybe like an amphibian that spends half its time in the water. I don't know.
Like a saltwater crocodile.
Yeah, something like
that. It lives in the water a lot of the time. but he's not
okay.
Fish.
Onward. Omer Rav Ashi, Shfar Nuna Shori. So Rav Ashi says, here's another one. The Shfar Nuna is the name of a kind of fish, is mutter, it's a kosher fish. Kodesh Nuna Osir, but the Kodesh Nuna is Osir. The Simonach, and the way to remember which one is which, is remember the phrase, Kodesh Lashem, holy to Hashem, meaning like off limit. So that'll help you remember that the Kodesh fish is Osir.
What is the Kodesh fish?
So we don't know exactly, but whatever it is, Tosfos actually brings a Girsa from Rabbeinu Hanano that's the other way around, actually. The Shfar Nuna is Osir, the Kodesh Nuna is actually the kosher one, because in that case, the simon will be Kodesh Yisroel Lashem, that Hashem made this fish, the Kodesh fish, mutter to his people. It could be, yeah. As for what the Shfar Nuna is, Steinsaltz, I think, says that the Shfar Nuna might be the hammerhead shark, in which case the Shfar may be like related to Shveferes, because the front of it looks kind of like a pipe. I don't know. Anyway, Ikadamri, another version of this discussion, is Kvar Nuna Osir. The fish called Kvar Nuna is Osir. The Simonach, and the way to remember it is the phrase Kivra Evdikachovim, the Kvarim of Goyim. Again, Tosfos also brings from Reina Hanano the same thing, that that just the opposite. The Kvar Nuna is the one that's mutter, because the way to remember it is Kivre Ovi Kachavim Enim Matamim Oil, that graves of Goyim are not Matame in the same way that Jewish graves are. So therefore, in other words, it's not Tame, so therefore there would be mutter. What these kind of fish are, I don't know. Some kind of fish. More on this, Rabbi Akiva Ikwa Leginzak. Rabbi Akiva visited Ginzak. We had this a few days ago where Rabbi Akiva visited Ginzak and asked him three questions and didn't know the answer. There was a Tosfos that pointed out over there that maybe the Girsa should be Mar Ukva rather than Rabbi Akiva, because how does Rabbi Akiva not know these things? So over here also it could be maybe it's also Mar Ukva. Anyway, Aisul Kameahu Nuna Dabidomi the Chipusha. So they brought him a certain fish which resembled a Chipusha, which is a Terefa kind of fish. So they wanted to know this one, it resembles the Terefa one, but it's not the same one. Is it kosher or not? Chafye Bidikula. So what he did is he covered it with a basket, and the fish moved around inside the basket. Or some of the Mephoshim say Chafye means he rubbed it with a basket to see if any scales come off. Chazabe Kalfi, he saw scales in the basket. The Shaoye, and he was mastered it. Similar to that story I was mentioning before about the scar.
The Dikula, it's a machlekes between Rashi and Tosfos. Everybody
agrees that Dikula is a basket. The question is, does it mean he covered it with a basket and waited for the fish to flop around and maybe shed some of its scales? Or did he use the basket to rub it?
No, I'm talking in
Kula. Oh, I don't know.
For remember the Chaticha Al-Gabi Chaticha machlekes?
I don't remember. I haven't learned that Gemara, so when we get there.
Oh, we'll get there.
Okay.
Same word.
I don't know. Okay, another one. Rav Ashi equals the Tamduria. Rav Ashi one time visited a place called Tamduria. They brought him a fish that resembled an eel. Tzlofach in modern Hebrew is an eel. So this fish resembled an eel, which is a tshreva fish.
Is it a fish?
It's a sea creature, whatever the point is. Whatever the point is, it would have to have fins and scales in order to be kosher. Nachte lahadu yoymer, so Rav Ashi picked up the fish and held it against the light. Chazia to have a bit simcha, he saw that there were scales on it. Vishalia, there was massive, because the din is, the scales have to be visible to the naked eye. As usual in halacha, we don't care about things that are microscopic. But so he couldn't see them clearly without putting it to the light, but at least if he could see it in the light, then he it has scales.
Like
no, this one was resembled. An eel itself is today, right.
A very long fish.
Could be, it could just be some kind of long fish, yeah. Okay. Another one, Rav Ashi Ikla Lahu Asra. Rav Ashi one time visited a certain place. I saw coming Nuna Damid David Domi the Shfar Nuna. They brought him a fish which resembled the Shfar Nuna, which we said before that Shfar Nuna, according to the Girsa that we had in our Gemara over here, was Mutter, and according to Tosfos, the Girsa was Asr. The here was a fish that resembled it. So again, the question is it the same fish and kosher, or is it whatever? Chafye b'meshichli chivri. So Rav Ashi covered it up with white basins or white cups, so that way the scales, which are darker, would stand out better against it. Chazav kalfi, he saw scales in it. Veshalia and say who's master the fish, because it has scales. Chafye b'meshichli chivri. He covered it with white basins, so that way if it sheds any scales, then they'll stand out against it. Rav Babachana equal Akra de Agma. Rav Babachana visited a place called Akra de Agma. Krivile Sachanta. They served him some Sachanta, these small fish that we were talking about before. Shamilahu Gabra de Habakorile Basi. Then he overheard somebody calling somebody called that fish bati, which was a known name of today for fish in those days. Omar, so he thought to himself, midika kardele bati, since this person is calling this fish bati, even though it's not really, it seems to be tzachanda, shmamina dover tome isbe, it must mean there's something shape in it, let me say it, because hashgacha bati was a known name of fish that's shape. It would be like nowadays if he called it catfish.
Right.
So there must be something wrong with it. Bashgacha prophet, I heard that. Loy ochominei, so he didn't eat from it. Look, safra ein, bro, the next morning when it was light, he looked more carefully at it. Ashkach be dava tome, and sure enough, he found something shape mixed in here.
Like what?
Some other kind of fish that's shape or whatever. Yeah. So he said on himself the pasuk, nothing bad will happen to the tzaddik, and with Hashem help, that the siyata d'shmaya, this guy came and then called this bati, even then, and that was enough to keep me away. Some of Farshim actually say it may not even mean that he called the fish bati. Bati was also the name of a person. We're going to actually have a person at the very end of the Masechta named bati. It could even be that he overheard somebody bati. Calling to his friend, bati, come over here, and he took it as a message, min Hashemayim, to be careful. Then the Mishnah said, "Rakodet shol chiltis." Another thing that you're not allowed to buy from goyim is a piece of chiltis. Chiltis is an herb. It has a very, very short taste, and it has a name in English. It's called asafoetida, but it's not something that you commonly find nowadays. You can look it up, but
it's right out of the dictionary.
Yeah, whatever it is, it's very short. It's very short stuff. So sharp, in fact, you mentioned in Chulin, in Chulin over there, when it talks about chafis, you have a din over there that if an animal ate a piece of chiltis, you have a problem that it might be chafis because the chiltis is so strong that it can make a hole in its stomach, that it can burn a hole through the stomach. Anyway, the point is, though, sometimes people would eat it for medicinal purposes, very carefully, of course. And you have, so now if you have a piece of it that was cut by a goy with a knife, then you have a problem of kashrus. So that's the thing, my time, and why is it also to buy a piece of chiltus from a goy? Because they cut it with a knife, and the knife has shreifus in it. Now, even though we established before, and we're going to talk later in the Masechta, that noisin tam l'fgam is mutter, and therefore now you have again. One way of looking at it is the knife has not necessarily been used in the last 24 hours, so therefore the taste in it is automatically pogrom. Or it could be on the face of it that even if it was used within the last 24 hours, we would assume maybe that the taste of it is not going to give a good taste to the chiltis. No, it's just the opposite. Agav chufi de chiltisa, because of the sharpness of the chiltis, mechal yalei shamnusa, it will improve the taste of the fat that's in, or some portion you can say, we could be talking about the fat on the surface of the knife, and the sharpness of the chiltis will improve the taste of it. And therefore it becomes something that gives a good taste, and therefore also,
anything that's sharp.
What's the din as far as other sharp things, onions, for example? Right. So this you have a machlokas, apostim about it. Are we saying only chiltis, which is extremely sharp, has that property, but not necessarily other things that are just a normal amount of sharpness, like onions or garlic or what have you? Or maybe it applies even to other kinds of sharp foods. And that's the generally accepted halacha. This is where we get the concept that it does apply to them also. This is where we get the concept that when we have onions or other sharp vegetables like that were cut by a goy, then you have a real problem because the knife may have been used for traces.
Right.
Yeah.
And so therefore...
And therefore it'll be also. Then the sharpness. So even if the knife is not been yoyim.
Even if it's not been yoyim, right. Which means wakes up the day.
Any
kind of time.
Right. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Avdei de Rav Levi habakom mazmin chiltisa, the servant of Rav Levi, who was an Eved Kanani, because they didn't have a bottom Ivrim in those days, there was a Rav Levi's servant, used to sell chiltis, and people would buy from him. There was no problem, because they knew that it's okay. Pi noch nafshe de Rav Levi, but when Rav Levi passed away, also the Kamei de Rav Yechanan, they came to ask Rav Yechanan, they asked him, Ma'ulam mizmen minei, can we keep on buying from him? Or maybe now maybe now it's not under a valid hechsher anymore. We don't know who's supervising it.
The mizvan.
Yeah, the mizvan to buy from him. Amalahu, he answers them, Avde shel chaver hareu kechaver, the slave of a chaver is like the chaver himself. Until we have reason to be choshed that this slave is doing something wrong, we can assume that he's still following what his master, Rav Levi, taught him, and therefore we can still continue buying chiltis for him until we find that otherwise. Similarly,
we don't have a chashash.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do whatever he wants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was an Eved Kanani. No, an Eved Kanani is Nachal Tomei Sum of Nechem. His sons would inherit him. Whoever, yeah. This, by the way, as far as the as far as the question about the sharp vegetables, actually, Tosfos over here says that not. That, for example, onions and leeks would not be included. It's only skillets, which is extremely sharp. But again, most other Rishonim disagree with that, and that's how it's brought drawn out. Okay. A similar example, Rav Huna Baman Yumi Zavan Tchelt the Ma'an Shidibesi did of Amram Chassidah. Rav Huna Baman Yumi used to buy Tchelet from the wife of Rav Amram Chassidah. The Anshe Debeis means the members of his household, but it means his wife. So you'd buy Tchelet from the wife of Rav Amram Chassidah. Now, Tchelet is another one of those kinds of things where it's easily substituted with something else, because you have Tchelet, real Tchelet, that's made from the Chilazin, is extremely expensive, and of course, eventually they lost the identity of the Chilazin, and therefore most people don't do it nowadays, although you have Radziner Tchelet, and you have this kind of Tchelet, and whatever that they claim to have rediscovered, whatever, but anyway, Tchelet itself, because it's very expensive, there was always the chash that somebody is substituting instead Kola Ilan, indigo, which has exactly the same color, but it's not kosher for tzitzit.
It's the actual
material that it's made from, the actual
fish,
blood of this particular fish or mollusk or whatever it is, that's what's actually required. Daraisa, you can't use Kola Ilan or whatever. So therefore, when it comes to tchelet, you also have to be buying from somebody who you know.
When a terrorist talks about tchelet,
that's what it means.
About the mollusk itself.
So again, Rav Huna Baman Yumi used to buy tchelet from Rav Amram's wife. Mm. Also, the coming of Rav Yosef. So now, after Rav Amram passed away, he came to Rav Yosef to ask what's the din. Can I continue relying on her that she's selling the genuine article? Lo have biyadei. So Rav Yosef didn't know the answer. Poga bechonan chayata. So whether you can
buy from a neighbor, the master of which has died, why shouldn't you buy from the wife?
Because he didn't know what Rabbi Yechon had said, maybe. He didn't know what Rabbi Yechon had said. Poga bechonan chayta, so then Rav Huna Baman Yumi met up with Chonan the tailor, Omale, and Chonan tells him, Yosef Anya Minole, where is poor Yosef supposed to know it from? He calls him poor Yosef because he was blind, and we also find in various places in Shat that he forgot some of his learning. Okay, we're Chonan Chayta himself, apparently was one of the Chachamim. So he has the right. He's a colleague of Rabbi Yosef.
Right,
he's able to. Bididi have it order. You should know such a thing happened with me. Is a vini tchelta ma'ansha devesa de Rabbi Noah achur de Rabbi Ba'aba. I used to buy tchelas from the wife of Rabbi Noah, the brother of Rabbi Ba'aba. And again, when Rabbi Noah passed away, I didn't know. V'asori l'kamei de Rabbi Masna. I came to Rabbi Masna to ask whether I can continue relying on her. Loi have a biyade, and he didn't know the answer. So Chonan the tailor continues. V'asori l'kamei de Rabbi Yehuda Mehagrunya. So I came to Rabbi Yehuda Mehagrunya to ask him the halacha. Amali, and he says to me, Nafalta liyod, you've fallen into my hands. In other words, look at that. Now you need me to tell you the halacha.
Implying
that he was very satisfied with all these years, like you never needed to ask me, and now all of a sudden you need to. Some other mafoshim say that what it means is, now I finally have a chance to use this halacha that I know, that now I'm able finally to teach it to somebody. Hachi amar Shmuel, eshes chaver hareik a chaver. This is what Shmuel said. The wife of a chaver is just like a chaver. Therefore, yes, you can continue relying on her, and therefore now Chonan Chayta says, Chonan the tailor says to Rav Huna Ban Yumi, same thing, you can keep on relying on Rav Amram's wife until anything happens to suspect her.
Differently if you think the same
you would
thing about
because
he didn't read the Gemara yet.
But that, no. But was, yeah, he had not necessarily
Zamaroyim
knew. Well, one second, then. Rabbi Yosef was not necessarily expected to know what Rabbi Yosef had said. The Amaroyim didn't necessarily know everything that each other had said until they started assembling the Gemara. But besides that also, the reason why all of this is a chiddush is because...
They lived in approximately the same time?
No, well, yeah, Rabbi Yechonah lives in Eretz Yisrael and Rabbi Yosef in Babel. But anyway, the point is, though, a chaver, in order to be a chaver, a person has to accept on them, as the Gemara was going to say, a person has to accept on themselves dibrei chaveris. They have to accept on themselves that they're going to follow these halachas and have to be familiar with them. So you wouldn't be sure, is an eved, is an isha necessarily going to be familiar with them? So that's the point that we say that, yes. So thus we've learned now over here what we actually learn in a Braisa, namely, the wife or the slave of a chover is like the chover, and therefore chover shemeis ishtei bottom of nebeis harem haskotan. Therefore, if a chover dies, so his wife or his children or his, and the other members of his household are all still continue their original chazaka ad sheichoshtu until we have reason to suspect them. Similarly, if you have a courtyard where Tchelos is sold. In other words, you have, this is not people who live there all the time. We're talking about, in other words, this is Mefoshim Explain. This is talking about like a place where you have like a regular, it's a regular place where sellers come and go, and they're selling Tchelos over there. Harein v'chaskofen, actually possible, same thing, that chotzer still has its chazakah until there's reason to passel it. Meaning, in other words, even though you have the original merchants who were there the first time have gone, and now you have other merchants, you can still continue assuming that it has the same chazakah until you have a reason to be chashed. We learn in a braisa in this connection, eshes ama oretz shenisus b'chaver. What about if the wife of an ama oretz marries a chaver? V'chein bitei shel ama oretz shenisus l'chaver, or the daughter of an ama oretz marries a chaver. And in their original household, they weren't keeping these various dinim of Truma and Meiser, and then Truma Vatara, and so forth. V'chein avdei shel ama oretz shenimka l'chaver. Similarly, if a slave that used to belong to an ama oretz is sold to a chaver, kulam tzrichim l'kabel divi chaverim, all of them, in order to be considered chaverim, they all have to, before we can trust them on anything that a chaver is trusted on, for example, Truma Vatara and Meiser, and over here we're saying chelos and so forth, they have to accept it on themselves. They have to make a verbal commitment in front of Beis Din, in front of at least the Beis Din of three, that they're going to keep these dinim.
What is the uptake of chaver?
Chaver literally means a friend. So yes, so the Rambam explains that some of the chachamim are called chaverim because they're the friends. Right. So the Rambam explains that some of the chachamim in particular are called chaverim because their chaverus is a true one. Their chaverus, their friendship is based on Torah, and therefore it lasts, like it says in the Kriyavis, right? That Avashi is fully bedover versus Avashi ain't fully bedover. The idea, though, basically is that a chaver is somebody you're able to trust him on matters of Tumah V'Tara in particular, and on matters of Maestris, so therefore you're able to be a full-fledged chaver, a full-fledged friend of him. You're able to eat and drink freely with him without having to worry about issues of kashrus or Tumah V'Tara or whatever. That's why they're called chaverim.
They were like an higher madriga than the regular.
So you have the Amei Oret. You have, there's a concept called Nemon, where a person is trustworthy as far as Tumah V'Tara, but not as far as anything else. And then you have a chaver who's also trustworthy as far as Tumah V'Tara, knowledgeable and trustworthy as far as Tumah V'Tara.
One is an Amaretz.
So an Amaretz is not trustworthy at anything, right? So he doesn't understand. Even then, most of the Amaretz, we say, we're careful with Maestris, but you had a significant minority who were not. That's why we have the whole concept of Demai. But if you have, but if he can become a Nemon, you have a Nemon where he accepts on himself that he's going to keep carefully the dinim of Trumas and Maestris, and from now on you can trust him.
Maybe Trumas is not theirs.
Trumas and Maestris.
The interesting thing is that Phil, since he doesn't keep Trumas Hara, a Chaper doesn't do that much good.
Well, it still helps that when you buy from him, you don't have to consider it mine.
But if you're a chaver, you won't buy from him because you want something that's tart.
Not necessarily. If you're eating chulin b'tara, sure. But if you don't eat chaverim, don't necessarily have to eat chulin b'tara. And besides, you can buy from him chulin that was not. You could buy from him food that wasn't yet mukshel l'kabel truma. But if it's the other way around, a woman who used to be married to a chaver and now remarries an amoretz, or the daughter of a chaver marries an amoretz, or a slave of a chaver is sold to an amoretz, then Rameir says in that case they do not have to accept on themselves divrei chaverus. We still consider them to be chaverim until otherwise specified. Right. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, achen tzrichim lekabel divrei chaverus atchila. Note, they also have to accept on themselves divrei chaverus in their new status. They need to, if this woman, for example, wants to be accepted, she needs to still go in front of the Beis Din of three and say that she's going to continue following the dinim of a chaver, even if her husband is not, and so then the same thing with the other. That's how you become a chaver, by making such a declaration in front of them.
So the wives had to go to the Beis Din.
V'chein hoyer Rav Shimon ben Elazar omer, and thus also Rav Shimon ben Elazar said, I can give you an example where we see that once a woman remarries, for example, then her status changes, because ma'aseh be'isha achas shenisus l'chaver, it happened once there was a certain woman was married to a chaver, v'oseh kasheres le'tfilin al yodei, and she would tie tefillin on his arm, which is to help him with the mitzvah. Nises l'moiches, later on she married a tax collector, and tax collectors in those days were generally very, very dishonest people, because they would collect more than they need to and keep the extra for themselves. So our modern-day tax collectors are not necessarily like that. You can talk about how much the government is taking for themselves more than they should, but we're not talking about the... Anyway, but...
He doesn't hear...
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so she married a moichis, and then instead of putting on tefillin on him, she was tying on his arm the seals and the stamps that they use, that the moichin would use, in other words, to help him with the job. So we see, in other words, that now that she married a moichis, and things change, and she's going with his ways instead of her old husband's ways. So therefore, Shimon allows her to say, by the same logic, therefore, if a woman was married to a chaver and now to an amoret, yes, she needs to accept divrei chaverus, otherwise we have to assume that she's going to follow the ways of her husband, the amoret. Going to the Beis Din and making this declaration. We'll stop over here, but just to point out real quick, there was an interesting discussion that the Achronim have based on our Gemara over here. Given that women are not chayiv in tefillin, can a woman validly put tefillin on a man? On the face of it, our Gemara is saying yes. On the other hand, maybe it means she didn't actually, Tosfos discusses elsewhere, I think, in Menachos. Maybe it doesn't mean she actually tied it. Maybe she just like helped him, like holding the bias in place while he ties it or whatever. Yeah. So it's not so simple.
Why is it such a discussion? I mean,
because the fact of the matter, on the one hand, our Gemara is saying that she tied tefillin on his arm, which implies maybe that it's allowed. On the other hand, the fact is, usually we say that only a person who is actually chayev in a mitzvah can actually accomplish it. Mm-hmm. Women are not chayev in tefillin because mitzvah is esher shazman grama, so maybe it shouldn't work.
But he makes a bracha.
No, but you still have to be doing the actual kshira. You have to be doing the actual time.
She might have just been one. But man, he has a problem with arm, and his wife or daughter.
So no, if we're talking about the wrappings around the arm, that's definitely not a problem. The actual mitzvah is the tying. So what the tying consists of, you have a few different explanations among the poskim. We hold, the Alter Rebbe holds, that the tying is when you tighten the knot over there. That's considered the tying because now you make it. Now it's tied tightly in place. According to the Alter Rebbe. Tightening up the strap over there, and therefore tightening up that little loop that the strap passes through. That is the shear. That's why we make the bracha right before that.
Not the
winding is definitely not. So you have I think other poskim who say that the tying is when you tie the end of it onto your hand over there. And I think you have some of the rishonim who argue that maybe maybe you actually have to open up the knot. Maybe you literally have to undo the knot, the shoyad knot, and redo it and retie it every day.
That we don't
pass them like that because again, the Alter Rebbe said that we have the knot over here, which can be adjusted, it can be made bigger and smaller, and that's enough. Yeah, and in the belt also, you know, they have the big loop over there that goes around half the arm, and then another big loop that goes into it. That's apparently also considered kshira according to that opinion.
Which big loop?
Yeah, the among Ashkenazim and among Sfaradim, you have like a big loop that comes out of the tefillin toryad that's not adjustable. It's always permanently that size, and then you put the strap through it, and you loop it like this. So whatever it is, all that is the kshira. The windings around the arm is definitely not part of the kshira. Yeah, there's no question that she could help with that. Yeah.
This Tosfos here on the bottom it talks about the specific topic that has been yelled. And if it's not a ben yom, it's a topic that is not a ben yom, Stam kalim
and ben yom.
Yeah. Sex thing, it's a topic that is stam shabai a yom or at mo, few in stam shabai a yom, shem in stam shabai the davar shahu pogim.
Ba'en, right? I've got the chain of no sim tam, yeah.
So that's what he's saying, that's according to Rashi too.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Right. That Rashi is saying over here that we can assume, therefore, that the keli that they cook the kusban or the oil or what have you in is not b'nei yomim. And the same thing with the knife. The only problem with the knife over here is, again, because even though it's not b'nei yomim, but still the chiltus, the sharp stuff, makes it
b'nei yomim. We're assuming that, it's a sex faker, right? We're not assuming that it's not a b'nei yomim, but... We're assuming that if it just happens to be a ben yoma, we're assuming a sex fake in the Gemara.
Right. So now, when it comes to chiltis, we can't do that because with a chiltis, you only have one topic: has it been used for treifas or not? Because even if it was used for treifas a few days ago, the sharpness of the chiltis will close the veneer; it'll wake it up again, right? But with other kinds of things, that's what Tosfos is saying.
So this is a sex fake actually in the Gemara. The Gemara, according to Rashi and Tosfos, presupposes a sex fake in order to concoct.
In order to make it, that's the oil that they cooked and the kutbun they cooked or whatever is mutter, right? Right.
Other Mephoreshim.
Again, the Rambam holds that Stam Kalim of Goyim, we do have to be concerned they are B'nai Yoyman.
So he has to explain
that in the case of the oil, in the case of the kutbun, it is a Noisim Tam with Gam, even if it's within 24 hours. Because kusban, the taste of it will be ruined by a taste of
meat. So anything that happens to be trace is going to be pegamit. So he doesn't even need a sex faker.
Right. In the case of kusban and in the case of oil, that wouldn't necessarily apply to other foods.
Right. right. Yeah, anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Rashi's going kind of the same way because of what it's saying. He's also counting on the...
Well, I mean, it comes out the same halacha in the Gemara. Neither Rashi nor Tosfos nor the Rambam can argue with the Gemara, but they can understand the Gemara in different ways. Yeah. Right. Sure.